Welcome to What's Polarizing America Today. Y'all, 1-year-old baby is dead, and his mom is the reason why. And you can ruminate with that. I know you know the story I'm already talking about, so you can just sit there before you decide how you feel about it, because I'm going to walk you through exactly what happened and follow the sequence of events instead of the headlines and the angry rants and all of a sudden the internet and the black community cares about black lives, which is shocker. I believe I just did an episode on how many are dying just in Chicago alone. That's not even across the whole country. I'm Brandon Lynette. This is Faith and Fire, God and Country. Really, today we're just going to talk about one big thing, and that's accountability. The total, complete generational collapse of personal responsibility in this country and what it's costing us in actual human lives. This show is brought to you by Liberty Super Patch, which that is my go-to every single day. BrandonLynette.com, BrandonLynette.superpatch.com. You can find it in the show notes. Check it out. This is what happened, okay? A car, there's a shoplifting incident. Whether or not there was some shoplifting or it was just someone being questioned, police were avoided. Okay. Instead of obviously, if I was being accused of shoplifting and the cops wanted to talk to me, I'm going to straighten it out. Okay. Either I'm going to provide a receipt, or if I'm guilty, we'll figure that out. I'll take the accountability. So there's a shoplifting issue. The car is being pursued by the police. The driver does not pull over. The driver does not comply. The driver made the decision, a very active, conscious decision, to drive that vehicle directly toward officers who were trying to stop said vehicle. In the passenger seat, this 1-year-old boy is being held up by his mother. Held him up in a moving vehicle, driving toward armed police officers who had every reason to believe that their lives were in immediate danger from the vehicle bearing down on them. This baby is Cohen Wiley. He was shot and killed. His family's attorney is calling him the youngest victim in American history to be fatally shot by police. And his face and his name and his life are now a part of the national conversation. The internet is going crazy with this. And yes, I guess I'm here to keep y'all mad, maybe. And I'm okay with that because someone has to say the truth. The police did not create that situation. The driver, the baby's mom, they created that situation. Every choice that put that baby in danger belonged to the adults in the car. Don't commit the crime that gets police chasing you. Don't flee from law enforcement, especially if you're innocent. Don't drive a car at the officers trying to stop you. I don't get why this is so hard for people to understand. For the love of God, do not hold your infant son up as a shield, a distraction, or whatever this mother believes she's doing in that moment, because holding a baby up in front of a windshield during a high-speed confrontation with armed officers, you're not protecting your child. You're putting that child directly in the line of fire. I don't want you guys to think like I just don't have compassion. I have enormous compassion for a baby who never got a single day of choosing anything in his tiny short life. I have no compassion left over for the adults who made every single choice that led to him being in that car in that moment, in that position. This is the entire crisis of this country in one tragedy. Nobody takes responsibility for their own actions anymore. The driver, not responsible. The system is responsible. The mother isn't responsible. The police are responsible. Nobody who actually held the wheel or held the baby gets blamed for what they did. Only the people who were trying to stop a fleeing felon get blamed for the outcome of that felon's choices. I should say alleged. Alleged. The point is, you're a felon now because you're fleeing the cops. I'm just tired of this. Everybody's exhausted. The American people are tired of this. Make the choice not to flee from police. Make the choice not to put your baby in danger. That's it. It's so completely simple. I don't understand what's being miscommunicated here. It is so simple, and we've made it complicated because admitting it's simple means admitting fault, and nobody especially in this culture lately, nobody wants to admit fault anymore. And while we're talking about chaos that didn't have to happen, let me tell you what happened in North Carolina yesterday, because it happened. Monday morning, inmates at the Bernie Martin Regional Detention Center in eastern North Carolina assaulted the guards on duty and took control of parts of the facility. 88 inmates and three guards were inside at the time. Two guards were taken hostage. The North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, responded, and it took hours to regain control. Roughly 80 inmates had to be physically removed and transferred to other facilities. The jail is closed indefinitely while they assess the damage. The governor, Josh Stein, said the perpetrators must be held accountable for what he called this horrifying action. I agree with him completely. I want you to notice something about his statement because it's the correct statement. He didn't blame the guards. He didn't blame the facility's design. He didn't blame society. He said the people who did this must be held accountable for what they did. Y'all, that's the standard. That's the only standard that's ever actually worked in a functioning society in human history. You do the thing, you own the thing. The moment we stopped applying that standard equally to inmates, to fleeing drivers, to literally anyone, is the moment the entire structure starts to rot from the inside. And that's exactly what's happening. I want to talk about Electric Forest. I know that's a big talk right now because there's a story buried inside the one that it didn't get the attention it deserved. Electric Forest, it's an annual music festival in Rothbury, Michigan, and this year's event was abruptly shut down. They shut it down due to a severe thunderstorm with dangerous lightning that rolled through the area, forcing organizers to evacuate the grounds for safety. That's the official reason. It is a legitimate one. Everybody's upset about that. Everybody's upset. And let me get to what they should have been upset about, because now they're mad that they shut down for lightning. But let's talk about a deeper story. I get it. Lightning kills people every single year at outdoor events. Shutting down is the right call for that. But this is what else happened. A newborn baby was found dead on the grounds. A newborn, not an older child, not a teenager, a newborn baby discovered at a music festival attended by tens of thousands of people who were there for days of drugs and alcohol and complete disconnection from any structure or accountability. I don't have all the details of how that baby ended up there, and neither do you. So we don't get to speculate wildly about a tragedy we don't have the full information on, but literally, thousands of adults gathered in a field for an extended, unstructured, substance-fueled event. And somewhere in the middle of that, a newborn baby is dead. What does that say about the culture we've built that this is even a plausible scenario? That a baby can be born and die in the middle of a festival crowd without it being the lead story on every network of the country? That these people don't care to stop because there's a dead baby. They're pissed because the lightning shut them down. We have built an entire generation of entertainment and escapism around removing every structure, every boundary, every form of accountability that used to keep people and the children connected to them safe. I also did come across a little win today. And I tell you guys when I find a win, I'm going to share it. And I know you saw this one. I saw it last week. I just didn't get a chance to share it. Dr. Kirk Moore. If you haven't heard that name, he is an American hero. He handed out vaccine cards to patients while administering saline solution instead of the COVID injections. He just said the truth. I just did the right thing. You can't give informed consent to people when you don't know what they're being injected with. The United States Department of Justice has now ordered the charges against him dismissed. Think about what that means. A doctor looked at a product that was being mandated onto the American public, a product that's since been connected by sitting senators and testifying cardiologists to document it's harming children and adults, and he made the decision to protect his patients from it while still letting them keep their jobs, their school enrollment, their access to society by giving them the card without giving them the shot. He took a personal risk to protect people from what increasingly looks like a population-level pharmaceutical experiment. Population control. Your government's trying to kill you. And the federal government actually told him it was the right thing to do. That's not a small thing. That's a doctor's conscience being vindicated by the same government that mandated the product in the first place. So that's a hero. Let's cheer for Dr. Kirk Moore. We're going to jump over to Brazil for a minute because the story should terrify every homeschooling family in America. This is crazy to me. I'm a homeschool mom, so of course it's going to hit a little close to home. A Brazilian judge sentenced two parents to 50 days in prison for homeschooling their kids. 50 days in a cell for teaching your own kids at your own kitchen table. You guys understand what that represents, right? This is not just a Brazil problem. It is a preview. Every single time a government decides that it, not the parents, has the ultimate authority over a child's education, body, beliefs, it's making a claim about who that child belongs to. And the answer those governments are increasingly giving is not you. And this is crazy. They already own everything else. I mean, we pay for our house, the government still owns it, right? They own everything. This is why I will never stop talking about parental rights on the show. The same impulse that puts parents in prison for homeschooling in Brazil is the same impulse, just slower and more polite, that pushes the gender ideology onto kindergarten classrooms in Denver and forces children to perform same-sex kissing assignments. It's all the same impulse. The state believes it owns your child more than you do. So we have to resist it everywhere we see it because it starts small and it doesn't stay small. I just had this incredible conversation with one of my Facebook friends. She's actually a new friend. We had this conversation. She's just tired of the Pride Month. She said she is in a she's gay, and married and happily, quietly content, and hates all the stuff that goes around this. She said this is it. It started really small. We just wanted a voice. And that voice became a big monster on a megaphone, and now they want it to all go away. They're just people. They want it to all go away. This stuff starts small and it doesn't ever stay small. There's something else that's trending pretty hard right now, and so I want to address this honestly. A lot of people are really jumping on the bandwagon about Charlie Kirk dying from a microphone explosion. I can't tell you that's a confirmed fact because it's not, but there is a lot of chatter, and I told you a long time ago that I will never present a theory as confirmed truth. But what I will say is the official story of how Charlie Kirk was murdered has never fully satisfied anybody. Not one single person of us who ever watched that footage or studied the angles and asked reasonable questions, none of that's been fully answered. And when that kind of doubt persists this long after this much scrutiny, it usually means something isn't being told straight. And we know that. I'm not telling you what to believe. I'm telling you it's reasonable to keep asking the questions. A young husband and a father is dead. His family deserves the actual truth. And trust the official statement. It has not earned the credibility it would need for people to simply stop asking the questions. I don't buy any of this. All of the things that are going on about this case, but it is wild to me, so I'm asking the questions about why is all the chatter about the microphone explosion trending so hard right now? But there is still someone on trial for shooting him with a gun. It's all very confusing. So I say we have to keep asking the questions and not let this case die with Charlie Kirk. It's still a very sentimental feeling to see his videos going around and just to think that we lost someone so incredible for the common sense movement, for the accountability conversations. Definitely missed. I have a few more stories to mention, and they're exactly what happens when culture loses its conscience entirely, and I think that's happening. We've got an Indiana mother of seven. She's accused of offering her 7-month-old daughter for sex in exchange for $400. She denied it. The proof was found anyway. Then we've got a grandmother who poisoned her daughter and four grandchildren. All of them are gone. And this happened in the midst of a custody battle. Listen, I don't have to elaborate on either of these stories, but I want you to notice the theme that connects the stories in the show. A driver doesn't stop. A mother held a baby boy up instead of down. Inmates attacked the people guarding them. Newborn dies in a crowd that wasn't watching. A mother who would sell her own child. A grandmother who poisoned her family. Like every single one of these is a story about someone who had a basic sacred responsibility to protect a child, to follow the law, to behave with basic human decency, and they chose something else instead. They chose something else instead. It's heartbreaking. A little. other lighthearted conversation if you guys want to put your tinfoil hat on for a second. I brought up Palm Beach Pete the other day. Peter Simel is a retired Palm Beach real estate executive. He went viral after a video surfaced of him driving on I-95 while someone in a car shouted "Epstein's alive" at him. He admitted on camera that he attended parties where Epstein was present. He went on Jimmy Kimmel to deny that he's Epstein. He also agreed to take a polygraph test. And when asked directly about any connection to Epstein, the examiner said the machine indicated deception every single time. So he failed the lie detector test on camera when he was trying to clear his name. And this is why I want you to lean in with me here. There are reports that Florida election officials confiscated his DNA test results and advised him to withdraw his mayoral candidacy. So I'm going to be straight with you. That specific claim is circulating from sources I could not fully verify. So I'm just putting questions out here, okay? None of that part, it's not a confirmed fact. But this is my question. It's a fair one. If that DNA test cleared him completely, why would anyone need to confiscate it? And it did disappear. The results have not been shared. So that's very suspicious. But why would anyone need to advise him to drop out? And an innocent man waves the results in the air and holds a press conference. A guilty man's lawyers find a reason to make the paperwork disappear, right? That's what's so weird to me. And my husband is telling me this morning because he's like, "What are you talking about?" So I kind of fill him in and he's like, "Have you heard how that guy talks?" And I haven't listened to him, but he said he sounds ridiculous. And there's a lot of reasons that they don't look alike, but I also see the resemblance in how they do. So my thing is, okay, my full tinfoil hat for you today. And I'm telling you up front, what if they do this stuff right in front of our faces because they think we're too distracted, too divided, too exhausted to ever connect the dots? They think we're stupid. We've been useful idiots to them for a long time. So this could be some other distraction ruse, or it could also be maybe he is Epstein and they're making fun of us. They're mocking us because they get away with it. What if the entire Palm Beach Pete saga, the viral video, the Kimmel appearance, the failed polygraph, the conveniently vanished DNA results, which I would like to know if anybody has information on where the results went or who confiscated them, I would like to know. But all of this is happening in plain sight precisely because they're calculated and that nothing will happen to them. Even if it's true, no matter how obvious it gets, nothing's going to happen to these people. The elites, these people, they're not hiding in the shadows anymore. They're laughing at us out loud because for decades now, being caught hasn't meant consequences for people at that level. Just hasn't. And I'll go a step further into the rabbit hole because you know I will. If powerful people have access to the kind of medical technology, money, influence that lets them disappear and reappear, is it that much of a stretch to wonder if doubles, lookalikes, or even something more advanced has been used to muddy the waters around exactly what happened to Epstein and who's still walking around? I don't know. I'm not telling you I know. I'm telling you that when the DNA test disappears right, when it could answer the question for good, my instinct says somebody is protecting something, or again, we're being useful idiots and being played. While that conspiracy is breathing, the real documented Epstein story is accelerating fast. Leon Black, the billionaire former Apollo Global Management CEO, was hit with subpoenas at a House Oversight Committee hearing after refusing to answer questions about non-disclosure agreements that he allegedly signed with women connected to Epstein's circle. On record in front of Congress, he said, "I've never abused a woman. I've never been with an underage woman. I've never engaged in sex trafficking," and then refused to discuss the actual NDAs. So they subpoenaed him right then, immediately. The same week, a federal judge ordered the Department of Justice to produce and unredact the Epstein files that have been sought for years. That order is active right now. And in the middle of all of that Pete Buttigieg, I don't know how to say his name, Pete B. Was swatted at his home in Traverse City, Michigan. An anonymous caller falsely, I don't know, I'll tread lightly here, told Child Protective Services that he posed a danger to his 4-year-old twins. Police and a CPS worker showed up, removed the children from the home, put them through forensic interviews, and kept him separated from his own kids for 24 hours before determining the entire report was false. He called it among the darkest hours of his life. I want to say something. I am never going to be okay with two men raising a baby. I'm not doing that. I'm not okay with that. I've seen the horrific side of that. Two men, no. No bueno. Not whatsoever. I don't think they should get to adopt. I don't think they should get to buy babies on the black market. I don't think they should get to pay for surrogacy. Absolutely not a fan here. But this would be easy for me to skip past this I think swatting a politician's toddler without substantial evidence, it's not a conservative value. This is not cool. It's not justice. It's not accountability. If there was something that was substantiated, absolutely, let's protect these babies. But I'm also not going to pretend that it was fair. He's already got the kids, he's already raising them, and calling in a false act is not cool. It's cowardly. I feel like it's an anonymous act of cruelty against children that did nothing wrong. And I don't care what side of the aisle the target sits on, that behavior deserves full condemnation. We are the people who say protect the children. That has to mean every child, including the ones whose parents we disagree with politically. I am happy that the everything was unsubstantiated. I'm glad it was a lie, but also that just made the situation worse. Meanwhile, sex offenders per million population tells you its own story when you actually look at it broken down by a group. According to the data I found, the rate sits at around 3 per million for biological women, 395 per million for biological men. Okay. And this number, 1,916 per million for trans identified individuals. I'm showing you the way I show everything as numbers, worth your own research. Okay. Go check it out. And you could break it down for smaller demographic categories too. So verify the source. But the magnitude of that gap is crazy. And it's not something that should be waved away by anyone serious about protecting children. Again, two men should not raise a baby. Trans people need mental help. Not being around kids. That's insane to me, the amount of them that have been caught for sexual abuse. And a quick one before we move on, because I did bring it up the other day. I made a mocking post. I don't remember if I put it on the show or Facebook, but it is funny and it serves a point. The FFA, the FAA, supposedly issued an airspace restriction over a Scotland versus Brazil World Cup match in Miami after this internet sensation Brazilian psychic with 23 million followers. She predicted aliens would descend on the stadium and abduct players. She went super viral, super viral. And here's what really happened. Okay, this is why the internet is crazy, because people think they really shut down the airport. The Miami airport's own social media account posted that FAA restriction line as a joke, and they hashtagged parody, and nothing happened at the game because nothing was ever real to begin with. And I bring this up because it's a perfect harmless example of how fast something completely fake can look completely official online. And it should make you slow down before you share the next viral claim, including some of the ones I bring on the show. Always check, always verify, and remember that the Bible is consistent on this from the beginning to end. What looks like an alien isn't an alien. Ephesians chapter 6 tells us our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Whatever shows up in our skies claiming to be extraterrestrial, scripture already told us what we're actually dealing with. I want to take you guys back to the very beginning of the Bible, because the first sin humanity ever committed wasn't actually the act itself. It was what happened immediately after. So we're going into Genesis chapter 3. Adam and Eve eat the forbidden fruit. God comes looking for them in the garden, and he asks Adam directly, "Did you eat from the tree I commanded you not to eat from?" Adam's answer is the first recorded act of blame shifting in human history. He said, "The woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me the fruit of the tree and I ate." Notice what he did. He didn't just blame Eve, he blamed God. "The woman you gave me," as if God himself was somehow responsible for Adam's own choice to eat the fruit. Then God turns to Eve and asks her, "What has she done?" And she says, "The serpent deceived me and I ate." Nobody in that garden, in the very first moments after the very first sin, said the words, "I did this, this is my fault." Adam blamed Eve and God. Eve blamed the serpent, and everybody has a reason that actually wasn't them. And that pattern, that exact pattern, has been the operating system of human sin ever since. It's not new. It's not a modern phenomenon created by social media or weak parenting or any single case you want to point to. It's the oldest pattern in human history, going all the way back to the garden. We do the wrong thing, and then we reach for the nearest person or circumstance to absorb the blame instead of carrying it ourselves. This is what I want you to notice. God didn't accept either excuse. He didn't say, "Oh, That makes sense. Never mind then. There were still consequences. Real ones, permanent ones. Adam and Eve were removed from the garden. The ground was cursed. Pain entered childbirth. None of the blame shifted. None of it changed a single outcome. That's the lesson for every single story I told you today. The driver who blamed the system, the mother who will tell herself she was protecting her son, the inmates who will say the facility failed them. None of the blame shifting changes the outcome. Colin Wiley's still gone. The newborn electric forest is still gone. The consequences land regardless of who we point at on the way down. The only thing that's ever actually worked, the only thing scripture's ever actually honored, is the moment someone stops pointing and says, "This was me. I did this," like David did with Nathan, like the prodigal son did in the pig pen. The turning point in every redemption story in the Bible is the exact same sentence: "I am responsible." If you are listening to this and you know there's something in your own life that you've been blaming on everyone except yourself, I want you to hear me. The blame shifting doesn't actually relieve the weight. It just keeps you standing outside the garden instead of getting to walk back in. Confession isn't weakness. It is the only door back in. 1 John chapter 1 says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Not if we explain our sin. Not if we justify our sin, if we confess them very plainly as our own. And that's the invitation to you today. Whatever you've been carrying, whoever you've been blaming, including yourself in a way that's just despair, bring it to him directly. He already knows. He's just waiting for you to stop pointing at the bushes and step out into the open. Faith, fire, God, and country. I love you guys. I'll see you later.